The following Dharma discourse was given by Jeffrey Shugen Arnold at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shugen Roshi is the head of the Mountains and Rivers Order and abbot of the monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org. Thank you for listening.
Sir Master Dogen's Genjo Koan, Section 6. Firewood turns into ash and does not turn into firewood again. But do not suppose that the ash is after and the firewood is before. We must realize that firewood is in the state of being firewood and has its before and after. Yet, having this before and after, it is independent of them. Ash is in the state of being ash and has its before and after. Just as firewood does not become firewood again after it is ash, so after one's death, one does not return to life again. Thus, that life does not become death is a confirmed teaching of the Buddha Dharma. For this reason, life is called the non-born. That death does not become life is a confirmed teaching of the Buddha Dharma. Therefore, death is called the non-extinguished. Life is a period of itself. Death is a period of itself. For example, they're like winter and spring. We do not think that winter becomes spring, nor do we say that spring becomes summer. So for those who are familiar with this, we're using this teaching, drawing from this teaching of Master Dogen's, who was a 13th century Zen master in Japan, one of the sort of luminous figures in the Zen tradition and in our lineage. And this fascicle, this teaching, which he offered to a lay student, it's called the Genjo Koan, or the Way of Everyday Life. It's translated in different ways. And so we've been working through it during the course of the Ango, and this is the next section. Last night, a new student entered into training and read a petition at the threshold. I come here realizing the question of life and death is a vital matter. Every evening with the evening gatha, we chant that time swiftly passes by and opportunity is lost. We're reminded that life and death is of supreme importance. What is the question of life and death? What is it that is of supreme importance? What is it that we speak of as the great matter? Buddhism teaches that there are different realms of existence. In the teaching of rebirth, it can be different realms that we are born into in the next life, depending on how we've lived this life. We can also think of it as realms of existence that we inhabit within a lifetime, within a day. So there's the hell realm, which is really characterized by just hellish, unending misery, pain, and suffering. There's the realm of the hungry ghost, insatiable, unquenchable thirst. There's the animal realm, which is characterized as being bound to instinct, unable to make a choice, unable to move away from that. And in those three realms, those so-called lower realms, there's no choice, right? In each of those realms, you're completely, the being is bound within those realms, bound to the pain of that hell realm, bound to their unquenchable thirst, bound to their instinct. And then on the upper end, we have the God realms, right? Which are a little bit different. So they're realms of unending or almost unending bliss and plenty and all the good stuff. It's a God realm, after all. In that realm, there are lots of choices, but they've gotten lazy, right? They've forgotten that it was through living well that they were born into the God realm, and so ultimately they exhaust the good efforts of their karmic actions and they fall back down into one of the lower realms. In between is the human realm. And the human realm is considered most auspicious, most important because we live long enough, if we're lucky, to recognize that life has adversity in it, right? We experience pain and suffering. But we don't live so long that we can put off attending to that forever. And in the human realm, it's characterized by our capacity to make choices. So we can have visits to the hell realm and the hungry ghost realm, and those may characterize in certain ways big parts of our life or our being. We can be bound to impulses, to habit, like in the animal realm. We can live a dogmatic life, a very rigid life. But even within that, or we can have a God's life. But within that, we are human beings living in the human world, which means we can see where we are. We can make different choices. And so when Buddhism speaks of a precious human birth, a precious human life, it's not just because we're human. It's how we use it. So if in this lifetime we dedicate ourselves to alleviating the suffering of ourselves and others and bringing forth all that's good, then we're in the midst of a precious human life, right? Not but just because we're having so much fun, but because of how we're using this life. Who is it benefiting? And so this passage of Master Dogen's is clearly pointing to the question of life and death. What is life and what is death? The Buddha, it said, was driven in his own practice to want to understand why having life, which inevitably brings aging, most often brings periods of sickness, and ultimately death, but that's true of every living thing. Why does it cause us so much consternation? Why do we have such a hard time facing those basic realities? So in Buddhism, all questions about life and death and everything that arises when we consider it come from a self-clinging view based in a sense of self, right? I am alive. I have life. I don't want to lose this life. I don't want to die, right? At the center of that is me, the one who is alive, the one who has life, the one who doesn't want to die, the one who is going to lose life when I die. The Buddha said that we can look at that in terms of I am this, so that's just my basic sense of self. This is myself. Those are all the things I identify with. And as I mentioned yesterday, those of you doing the retreat, that when I identify with something or as something, at the same time, I'm, in a sense, disidentifying with whatever is not that. And then this is mine. I am this, this is myself, this is mine. And that is everything that I crave, that I want to possess, that I want to appropriate, that I believe I need in order to satisfy and have some sort of lasting satisfaction and happiness. And so to help us, Dogen says, firewood turns into ash and does not turn into firewood again. So he uses a very simple, ordinary example that we can all relate to. Wood burns, and after it's burned, what is left is ash. It does not turn into firewood again. We get that. Nothing goes back. This moment, this gathering, this morning, this gathering of you who are here for the weekend's retreat, it's never going to happen again, ever. Every Sunday we meet, every month we have an introductory retreat, but we never go back. In your meditation, you can have experiences, you will never have them again. You may have experiences that seem very much like other experiences you've had, but they are not the same. You are not the same. Which brings us back to this question of what is this you that is having this experience? That seems to be having another same experience. the same person having the same experience. Shantideva said, all that I possess and use is like the fleeting vision of a dream. It fades into the realm of memory, and fading will never be seen again. Why does the Buddha and why does Buddhism keep reminding of this? Right? So you come in the door and you're met with impermanence. It's like, okay. And then you walk down the stairs, you're met with impermanence. Okay. You go in to use the toilet, you're met with impermanence again. Okay, I get it. Why do you keep reminding me? Because we don't want to know. We forget. I remember when I was growing up, my dad was a heavy smoker. So I was a kid, be laying in bed, listening to him get up and hack, and hack, and hack. And I remember one day, I was a teenager, and I remember laying there in bed thinking, you think you're going to live forever. You think you can get away with this forever. Right? While I was just expecting him one morning to hack into his death. So we have this experience, this common experience of falling back, going back to old patterns. I thought he had taken care of that, and there it comes up again. I thought I had resolved that. There it is again. And so we see something, our mind forms a pattern, right? Things are alike, similar, they seem the same, but it's not the same. We are not the same. From one experience to the next, from one moment to the next, brings us back to this question, what is this you, this me, to which I attribute this sense of permanence, continuity, seamlessness, sameness, from moment to moment. The mind creates these patterns, which seems to create a sense of permanence. Like I was saying yesterday, when we think back to when we were young, I see myself as a boy. I see myself as a teenager. It was me, right? So there's something that is me, that was me now, was me yesterday, was me at 17, was me at 7, right? We have that sense. It sort of seems self-evident. And in that, it's like there's a kind of predictability. It's going to be me tomorrow. It's going to be me when I'm dying. I don't want to die. I don't want that me to go. But what is seen when we look beyond the pattern? The pattern is something that our mind creates. It creates associations. It brings things together, puts them into order. It's an incredible capacity of our mind, right, to associate things, to build patterns in our mind. But when we believe in them as something intrinsic, fixed, permanent, deterministic, and so we sit in Zazen, we see those patterns arising and we just release them. Don't bind yourself to them. Don't turn them into something they're not. Don't stake your life on them. Don't identify. They just let them come and go as they will. Dogen says, but do not suppose that ash is after and firewood is before. Okay, now this is strange, right? He seems to deny the obvious. Firewood burns, and then there is ash. So what is he saying? In a similar vein, a tree does not turn into firewood. A seed does not turn into a tree. What is being pointed at here? Before this morning, before this weekend, you were somewhere. There was a before. At the end of this morning, at the end of this retreat, there will seem to be an after. But Dogen says, do not suppose that ash is after and firewood is before. And what's important in these teachings is to keep remembering that every single Dharma teaching is about you. It's about the totality of the life experience, the human experience of being alive in this world as a human being. And if we don't see that, it's like, what does this have to do with me? What that means is I just don't see what it has to do with me yet. The Dharma is singularly about human existence and then our relationship with everything. right? The world, the earth, other people, other creatures. But it is pointing to this human life, this human existence, this mind, this consciousness. And so Dogen is using this metaphor of firewood and ash to point to a human existence. Our life is like a burning fire, right? And so why is he saying, do not suppose the ashes after and the firewood before? So the mind stream creates a sense of a smooth, continuous, seamlessness flowing, right? One day follows the next. One week follows the next. Month, year, decades. What is the thread that runs through it all? Me. The sense of self. That's what creates the sense that it is a seamless, continuous, and in that way permanent, ongoing thing. And so what happens, coming back to Zazen, when your mind ceases to create not only patterns, but time? What happens when your mind is no longer thinking in terms of time? How much more time to this period? My leg hurts, right? How long have I been sitting? This is taking too long. This moment went by so fast. We let go intentionally, or letting go, or rather just not picking up, not creating a sense of tracking. That's why somebody else keeps track of the time. You don't have to do that. So you can forget and enter into a natural state of timelessness, which simply means it's not like some weird zone you go to. It's just the mind isn't creating time, because time is a human-created thing, right? It's a way of measuring the passage. And so what happens when the mind stops doing that and enters into a state of timelessness? What happens to that mind stream, that sense of continuity, that sense of me, 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 me before, me after, me now? Where does that go now? So it's really important to appreciate that practice isn't trying to create a state in which you somehow subdue or suppress or put in another room or temporarily extinguish the self so that you can experience enlightenment, but there's the self just waiting for you, right? Because you subdued it. You did something with it. That would not be liberation, right? Rather, it's a practice of not creating. Not creating. Not creating what? Not creating what deludes us. Not creating what binds us. So when we want to preserve, like a meditative experience, we want to go back to it. We want to go back to an earlier time in a loving relationship, go back to an earlier time in our life that was simpler, easier. We want to go back into an earlier time of society. Like, how old is that desire? To go back to some earlier, simpler, purer time that never existed. But it's so seductive. This moment, this time, this place, this situation does not exist anywhere. The Buddha said in each moment, because of actions, karma, and the conditions that allow us to have a perception, to know, to have some experience of this moment, the Buddha said it is only to be experienced. That's what we can do. Experience it. He said it doesn't belong to you. It is not you, so don't identify with it. It is only to be experienced, and then it's gone. And it's gone so fast, we don't see it coming, and we don't see it going, and so there's a sense of seamlessness. Dogen says we must realize that firewood is in the state of being firewood and has its before and after. Is he contradicting himself? Yet having this before and after, it is independent of them. Another translation says, although it may have a before and after, this before and after can't be found. Firewood is just firewood. It appears in the moment of its burning as firewood. It has a before and after and is independent of them. What does that mean? When you were a child, you were a child. There was a before, but you are now independent of that. It is not you. It was not you then. It was its own state, its own time. Right now, you are in your own time and state. And that is changing, ever changing. So when the Buddha said everything is impermanent, he meant everything. In every instant, in every direction. But this independence does not mean separate and distinct. Before is before. Firewood is firewood. After is after. It appears in its own way, in its own state. Complete, whole, and perfect. So again, think about what's happening in Zazen. You're sitting and something arises. Right? So from a dualistic perspective, the instruction would be figure out what it is, identify it, name it, have an opinion about it, and decide what you want to do. Do you want to own it? Do you want to possess it? Right? Do you want to make it you? Do you want to expunge it? Do you want to get rid of it? Right? And so in Zazen, what we do to actually be in accord with our self nature, to free ourselves of suffering, is we release all of that activity. It arises in its own state. This mind, this thought, this emotion, this memory. You may like it, you may not. That's just your opinion. You may react to it, that's your karma. Right? We have developed an association, an idea, a belief, a habit in relationship to certain things, so we react in certain ways. It seems to be coming from the thing. And so in Zazen, what you're trying to do is not stop that, but just allow it to rest and return to its natural state. And so when we talk about letting go, we are trying to relax that habit, that gripping, clenching, clinging habit, which is strong. So we have to actually be deliberate in trying to release. And when you release that, whatever's arisen from all of the machinations of your mind, what remains? The thing itself. Firewood is just firewood. This thought is just this thought. This emotion is just this emotion. It is simple. It is pure. We may think of it as good or bad, but that's bringing a value to it. And there, we need to be able to do that. But when we become dogmatic in that, when we think that that's an absolute truth, we're not seeing clearly. So Dogen says, ash is in the state of being ash and has its before and after. Ash occupies the Dharma position of ash. That's what ash is. It's ash. So the question is, can you be in the state of you? Can you abide in this Dharma state of just this? Without adding, without subtracting. Can you allow that? Can we not hinder that? That's what we call practice. And if a person thinks that's easy, they have not practiced yet. And can we be in that state? The Dharma state, which we are in all along, every moment. We can't not be. A tree cannot be a tree, no matter what we think it is. We can say, that's not ash, that's flour. I'm going to make a cake. You can make a cake with it, but it's not flour. So that's why I say, can we allow that? Can we actually allow ourselves to just be in this moment, this particular Dharma state of this moment? That's the essence of Zazen. Can we do that without imposing our idea of ourself, of this, of what should be happening or what's not happening, of why it's not happening, or somebody else's idea? Just as firewood does not become firewood again after it is ash, so after one's death, one does not return to life again. So now Dogen, he is wound up and now he's thrown the pitch. Right? What was he talking about? Oh, this is what he was talking about. Just as firewood does not become firewood again after it is ash, so after one's death, one does not return to life again. Another translation says, after people die, they do not come to life again. But what about rebirth? Sort of a foundational, fundamental teaching of Buddhism, which Westerners, you know, and not just Westerners, I think probably all throughout, but it's not a part of our culture, right? We tend to be very grounded, science-based, logical, right? So what's with the rebirth thing? So that's what he's pointing to. But is he denying that? Rebirth is not one returning to life. That's not what it is. The self does not return. Why not? Because the self did not have life. Self is not a life, a being, a person. Therefore, it cannot return. It does not come, and so it is unborn. It does not go, and so it is undying. So what is rebirth? There are different ways that it's spoken of, volition, consciousness. It basically is based in grasping. I'm alive, I don't want to die, I'm dying, I'm dead, I don't want to be dead. And so that grasping mind, now freed of this body, consciousness, seeks another life, continues to cling, right? So we can misunderstand, you know, rebirth is kind of the Buddhist version of heaven. You get to go through it all over again. Yeah, what does that mean? Right? Wet nappies, right? Crying, puberty, high school, right? Suffering. Right. Consciousness grasping at I am this, not wanting to let go of my life, myself, my world, my time, my practice. So now the Bodhisattva in Mahayana Buddhism makes the supreme offering of choosing to return, right? So that they can do all of that stuff, right? And then find the Dharma again, practice and realize, and live a life of service. Come back not to just get more of what's mine, but come back to give more to you. So Dogen says, thus that life does not become death is a confirmed teaching of the Buddha Dharma, and for this reason, life is called the non-born. That death does not become life is a confirmed teaching of the Buddha Dharma, therefore death is called the non-extinguished. Life and death do not become each other. When there's life, there's just life. We shouldn't miss it. When there's death, there's just death. We should not miss it. I remember when my dad, who had cancer, and he was in his last couple years, and there was a moment I was with him, and he was very scared. He was very frightened. He was very vulnerable. And he said, which was not like him, and he said, I don't know how to do this. And I said, do what, Dad? And he said, I don't know how to die. And I said, you're not dead. You're alive. I said, look, I'm right in front of you. We're facing each other. I said, I think, you know, he wasn't a Buddhist. So I wasn't about to give him, you know, instruction in Buddhism. I said, but look, if you can do this, just right now, and just if you can keep doing that, I think at the moment of your dying, you can do that too. Because it's just another moment. Each occupies its own state, its own place, its own time. So to be in the state of this very body and mind, not the one that we want, should have been, that's all dreaming. That's why when we sit, we don't go with an agenda, you go with a practice. And that practice, by its very nature, brings you into this moment. And then the practice is, don't go away, don't fly away. Don't build something on top of that. Don't try and improve that. Trust it. That's the only place the Buddha realized that we can free ourselves. Everything else is a daydream. And so when we find ourselves aging, when we find our capacity, what we could do yesterday, we can't do anymore, right? Death becomes more real, or when somebody in our life dies and it becomes very real to us. The Buddha called those messengers, right? So that we can reflect on, be aware of, understand, yes, this too. And learn how to be in accord with it. What is the practice for being in accord with it? We've been doing it all morning. And so to be in this very body and mind, I can call it shugan, I can call it monastic, you could call it a layperson, you could call it mother or father, brother or sister, you could call it liberal or conservative, you can call it whatever you want. Those are names. Are they helpful? If they're helpful, use them. If they're not, why use them? But call it what you want. It's not you. And at the same time, you're not apart from it. And so Dogen says, life is a period of itself. Death is a period of itself. For example, they're like winter and spring. We don't think that winter becomes spring, nor do we say that spring becomes summer. They're each distinct in unto themselves. But where is autumn? We're in the midst of autumn. Where is it? And so to say that summer doesn't become autumn doesn't become winter, then we have to also understand autumn itself is not something. It's not a thing. It's a word. Where is autumn? Is it the temperature? Is it the light? Is it the color of the leaves? Look as we might, we will not find autumn anywhere, and yet we're in the midst of it. How wonderful. When we try and solidify something that is not, we will struggle. It's built in. We will be disappointed. The Buddha called this dukkha. Everything is a state in and of itself, a period in and of itself. So the question is really, from a Buddhist perspective, when we give something a name, when we perceive or think of things in terms of time, we celebrate a birthday, right? Someone was born, and yet that someone is unborn. And so when we bring in these, in a sense, illusions, from a Buddhist perspective, is does that help make us more kind? Does that help us be more harmonious? Does it help us be more clear? And so we use these constructions that we're so good at, like Buddhism, like a monastery, like instruments, like incense, like vows, like a teisho. We're just making this stuff up. Right? The Buddha started it. He didn't actually start it. It's been going on as long as humans have had consciousness. But the Buddha said, we can make stuff up and make a hell realm and create misery. Or we can make up, and that is not actually in accord. It comes from us, but it's not actually in accord with our basic nature. Because our basic nature abides in its own state, and that means it's peaceful. Something in its own state, in and of itself, is not in conflict or even relationship with anything else. It's only when it comes into being and we differentiate it with something else. Now we have to deal with, how are we different? What do we do about that? Do we create solid boundaries? Sometimes we need to create boundaries. Okay, do we believe those boundaries exist? Absolutely. We give each other a name. We identify each other in different ways. Is that useful? Does that make us more kind? Does it help us to live together, to be oneself? If not, let's not do that. It doesn't make sense. It's not good. Having done that, having become somewhat addicted to doing that, okay, so now can we undo that? Can we relax that? Can we see the illusory nature? Can we see the harm of that? Can we free ourselves of that? The Buddha said unequivocally, yes. There's no debate about that in Buddhism. There's no debate about your capacity to do that. There's a sutra in which the Buddha was in a area of the Kalamas, and they came to him. He was there with some of his students, and they said, look, I'm going to paraphrase, okay? They said, look, we sit here and these different groups come in, these different spiritual groups. They have practices, they have doctrines, they talk about their doctrines as being supreme. And they talk about other groups like yours and other groups, and they speak about your doctrines with, they despise them, they revile, they pull them apart. And they say, no, our teachings are the best. And then another group comes in and does the same thing. And so they said, which of these practitioners, these monks or Brahmins, are speaking the truth, and which are not speaking the truth? And the Buddha said, it's proper for you to doubt and to be uncertain. He said, uncertainty has arisen in you about what is doubtful. And he said, look, don't rely upon what has been acquired by just hearing something over and over again, nor just because it's a tradition, nor because you've heard it as a rumor, nor because it was written down, it appears as a scripture, nor because you've just sort of surmised that that must be true, nor because it's presented as an axiom, some absolute truth, nor upon some specious reasoning, nor upon a bias towards some notion that you have that you pondered on, nor upon seeing somebody who looks really impressive, they can do something kind of great or dazzling, don't be seduced by that, nor upon just thinking, well, this person is our teacher, therefore it must be true. He said, don't rely on any of that. He said, when you yourselves know these things, these teachings, the practices where they lead you, the people who are practicing them are good, are true, are affirmed by those who are truly wise. And when you undertake them and you verify that they're true, then you know that they are true. And this is a teaching that is very popular in the West, right? We're going to do it. I'm going to do it my way, right? But what's implicit within this is that the Buddha's teaching, right? So he's basically saying, you know, don't just listen to what I'm saying and now take that on as an absolute truth. Find out for yourself. So he's offering teachings. And he's saying, so look at them. Don't just speculate. Look at the people who are practicing. Try practicing these yourself and see. Do they lead to what is good? If they do, then that's telling you something. That's evidence that you can trust. If they're not, then maybe they're not true. And so we, with some measure of faith, we encounter the Dharma. We listen to the teachings. We reflect on them. We practice. And we verify. That's what this whole weekend's been about. That's why I said on the Friday evening, I said, just allow yourself to come in, make contact when you're sitting, when you're walking, when you're bowing, when you're doing liturgy. So you yourself are directly experiencing, even if it's a very beginning, in a sense, superficial level, you're still having an experience. And some of you have spoken about that during the weekend in Doksan and elsewhere about coming into contact, some with ideas, some with no ideas, but in actually experiencing something, something appears. Sometimes it's resistance. Sometimes it's confusion. Sometimes it's like something else. Feeling touched, feeling moved. And finally, on the subject of rebirth, in that same sutra, the Buddha said, there are four things that you can take solace in. The first is, he said, suppose there is a hereafter and there is a fruit that you can reap in that hereafter, result of your deeds, whether they're good or bad, that at the dissolution of your body and mind at death, you will be born into that heavenly realm, right, which is possessed of the state of bliss. You could take solace in that, if such a state exists. He said, suppose there is no hereafter and no fruit, no result of deeds done well or ill. In other words, this is it. This is all there is. Yet, in this world in which there is no hereafter, here and now, you have lived a life free from hatred, free from malice. You have practiced what is good to practice. You have tried to be kind and take care of others. You can take solace in that because you have lived the best life you could. Suppose that your evil actions, harmful actions, have no consequence. But you have lived a life of not creating harm. Right? So even though harm has no consequence, you could have gotten away with it, you would have lived a life in that body and mind. But you didn't. Take solace in that. Suppose evil results do fall an evildoer. There is consequence. There is rebirth. Right? But you have not, you have lived the best life you could. Right? Then you have not only done that, but you have also prepared for the best future life. So he must have been speaking to people who were questioning, doubting whether there's rebirth or not. And that's why I encourage all of us, as I have done for myself, is just study, examine, what does the teaching actually mean? The self is not alive, does not die, and be reborn again. And thus we are liberated in this life. And we can be liberated in this death because we do not have a self that we need to hold on to and preserve and protect and defend. And that gives us so much room and space to take care of each other. And so I hope for those of you here for the weekend that this was helpful in some way. You know your way here now, so we have a seat for you if you ever want to come back. And whatever this helps you to lead yourself to in terms of your own spiritual path, I hope you do. I hope it does. I hope you will. So I'll end with a few words. Pundits and prophets abound. Truths and certainties proliferate. Yet all the while, the eternal has no resting place. Your true refuge has no abiding. The season of great peace will never be found by force. So look closely in the ancient mirror, and you'll see what you have never lost.
Thank you for listening. To find out more about ZMM's programs, retreats, and residency, please visit us online at zmm.org.